I'm John Batchelor. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I welcome Svetlana Lakova, the historian, author of The Spy Who Changed History, the untold story of how the Soviet Union stole America's top secrets, a story that takes place in the 1920s and 1930s, and continuing, the dare of Stalin, who was momentarily an ally of the United States, sending young men to MIT and other distinguished institutions to borrow, steal, imitate, transfer intellectual property, we now call it, the secrets of American aeronautical engineering. However, Svetlana is also the author of Spygate Exposed, her experience in the 21st century dealing with the United States as well. This time, it's not a question of agents from Russia, where Svetlana was born, she's now an English citizen, stealing from America. It's a question of the American agents abusing the person and freedom of Svetlana Lakova. That is the story of Spygate Exposed. We've been telling, for now the 12th and final episode, the story of Crossfire Hurricane, the diary, how it hit Svetlana and how it won't let her go until and if there's resolution of the Russiagate matter, which there is expectation will be addressed by the John Durham investigation eventually. There are hints that Mr. Durham is active, but as of yet, Svetlana, a very good evening to you. These 11 episodes have brought us now to 2020 and the pandemic. And 2021 is a continuation of the pandemic. What are the lessons that you have learned from going through an experience that yet is not finished, but we're in the middle of it, but still you can reflect upon the events of these last 7 years? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. I think the main lesson is that living in a free society in the West, in a democratic society, I think it's quite difficult to envisage a situation where you can have a secret investigations, secret warrants, secret informers, and they start doing all this, you know, this cloak of secrecy, and where you as a person can, you know, as myself, for example, get caught up, and it becomes very Kafkaesque, where you don't know who your accusers are, you don't know why they accuse you of things, and I suppose in this case, the good thing that happened is we had a lot of information coming out recently, which says that, you know, which managed to, you know, bring to light some of the things that actually happened to me. And we now know that there were this numerous so-called counterintelligence investigations, and they were all designed to undermine the candidate, presidential candidate Donald Trump, and his advisors, and then later the president. But in the process that, you know, normal people who have nothing to do with politics can get caught up in it. And the lessons are that our freedom is very fragile, and that the institutions that are meant to be there to protect us can sometimes get hijacked for other reasons. And that can't happen again.
So the justice apparatus of the United States of America and the United Kingdom were compromised in a way, in a fashion that is hard to summarize, but in any event, in being compromised by false witnesses, you were a target, and that you have not yet recovered, you have not yet been satisfied, you have not yet been answered. How do you think of it right now, given that it's not finished? What is your thinking of where you are now and what you want to happen next?
Well, that's right. So what happened to me is that there was this secret investigations that nobody was allowed to know about, other than the secret investigations ended up in the media. So So in my case, false information about me was all over the media, causing me, my family, everyone around me horrible, horrible consequences, including me losing my job, losing my career, And, you know, it got to the way of death threats and having to move. And we just didn't know. And that's why I keep bringing up Kafka. You didn't know where it was coming from. It then transpires that this investigation, although it was secret, but it was actually being leaked. And it was an investigation into, you know, a political opponent of another political candidate or candidates. And that the any attempt to try and get any information as to, you know, why this is, you know, happening to you and trying to get some accountability, that which has been blocked on the grounds of, you know, we have to defend our sources and methods. We have to protect our sources, but those sources were lying. So in my case, for example, we had two confidential human sources, CHSs as they call them, paid informers for the security services, Stephen Harper and Christopher Steele, and they were lying about me to the FBI and other people. They were lying. But you're not allowed to touch that. You're not allowed to name them. I mean, for example, Stephen Harper is still to date is not named. Right. So his name is still redacted. So they're allowed to go and smear you and leak this to the media and, you know, turn your life upside down. But you're not allowed to expose that because that would somehow be dangerous.
Because it was politicized, that's why. You were caught up in a political contest, the presidential contest of 2016 and the midterms of 2018 and the presidential contest of 2020. Did you understand at the time that you were a victim of a political war, not an espionage war, but politics?
Well, no, other than, you know, I have a huge respect for the security services. As you know, I'm the historian of the security services. And I think, and so I found out about all this through the media leaks. And up until when the documents, you know, became declassified through the work of numerous, you know, various people in late 2019, early 2020, I had no idea that that was part of the political, you know, hit. And it's the fact that the security services were being used and abused for political reasons is something that is pretty scary, because that's, you know, that's a hallmark of totalitarian societies, where a regular person can be, you know, condemned, can be put into a very, very difficult situation because somebody went and informed on them for their own political purposes. So no, I didn't understand that at the time. And that's what it makes it so difficult. And ordinarily, if somebody falsely accuses you of things, you can, you know, you can deal with it, right? It's horrible, but you can take them to court. You can deal with the problem. But in the case where you have the security services involved under the cloak of secrecy, confidentiality, sources and methods, that there's just nothing you can do.
There's a deal of the case of Russiagate we do not have. We have an enormous amount of information, but they're missing pieces. I don't know whether it's classified or whether the documents have just not been found by important investigators or whether people are still holding it back. Draw upon your experience of how the Soviet state security works. Is there anything comparable between what you've been through and what your country people, we were born in Russia, what your countrymen and women went through under the regimes from 1919 till, well, today? I don't believe Russia is exempt from this kind of persecution. Is there anything that's an analogy, or is America completely different?
Well, but that's kind of, I suppose, what's so scary is, well, what we associate with totalitarian regimes is that one, you know, citizen can inform on another citizen falsely, and then the state would take it on. So, for example, you get accused of, I don't know, being a Japanese spy, right? And then the state system would have to investigate you. And very often it was that, you know, somebody wanted somebody else's flat or somebody wanted somebody else's job, and then you got to go and falsely, you know, get to go and falsely accuse the person. And then that falsely accused person won't have a way of figuring out, like, why were they accused, but they ended up being, you know, prosecuted or persecuted. And so the idea is that we just don't have that in a democratic, in a Western, in a modern society. It can't happen. And ordinarily in any criminal case, for example, if you go and accuse somebody of something, you have to have evidence. But in this case, in the case of Russiagate, they use the counterintelligence division, where remember that normally if you report a crime, the crime has to happen first. But they use the counterintelligence aspect in order to investigate the alleged crime that hasn't happened yet. And therefore, the way of starting the investigation, it's a very low, you can pretty much start the investigation on anybody using the counterintelligence powers because you're investigating a potential crime. And then you protect the identities of those people who report. And that's why it becomes scary, right? Because that means, and it doesn't matter which political party you associate yourself with or who you are. That means that anyone who has it in for you can go to the security services, to the Department of Justice, as we've seen in the case of Russiagate, and report you. And as long as it's reported through the right channels, the apparatus, the system, the services would start a secret investigation into you, and that could go on for years.
Yes.
And there's nothing you can do about it because they never present you with that evidence because it's counterintelligence.
I'm speaking with Svetlana Lakova. She is an historian, the author of The Spy Who Changed History and the Untold Story of How the Soviet Union Stole America's Top Secrets. She is also the author of Spygate Exposed, and she's commenting now about what lessons she's learned in the incomplete Russiagate story. It's not yet finished, maybe 100 years from now, maybe a year from now. However, when we come back, I'd like Svetlana to comment on what she wants to know about players whom she's met over the years involved in these false accusations and this unfinished business. What she wants to know of individuals who she's had contact with, who have corresponded with her, what she wants to know about them going forward. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.